Welcome in to the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. We are here with part two of our UVA men's basketball season preview edition, a two-parter. We've got Zach Carey, managing editor of Streaking the Lawn, still here with us. And you know him, Cuts from the Corner over on Twitter. We are here back for part two. We got more mailbag questions today, and we're going to get back into our season predictions. So let's kick it off with mailbag. And we're going to kick it off with a friend of the podcast, Bennett Conlin on Twitter. You all know him. He asked, has JMU surpassed UVA as the top program in the state? In parentheses, you promised to cover all questions. So, Bennett, we're going to cover your question by just taking a look at large. Is there a program in the state that is better than Virginia without Tony Bennett? The silence is deafening, to steal a line from John Freeman.
I love Bennett. I'm going to need to see something from JMU this year after Mark Byington's departure to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I mean, VCU, I don't know.
Yeah.
if you go off of that scrimmage result, VCU could be the team right now. Going forward into the future, I don't think any program has the resources that Virginia will have. And obviously a lot depends on the next head coach and who that is, or the next full-time head coach. I'm not ready to put anybody squarely over Virginia looking into the future. I think VCU will probably, I don't know, be the best team in Virginia this season, though.
Yeah, they crushed St. Mary's too in the other scrimmage. They've been on a heater. And I like Odom. But anyway, I agree. You know, Virginia has the most resources and I think is in the position to be the best team for a sustainable future this year. I like VCU for sure.
How much do you like Odom, Cuts?
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's got to be one of those names that you have in that discussion. I imagine him to be high on the board.
He's pretty high on national media's list as potential options if you don't go with Ron Sanchez.
I don't need to see the UMBC highlights for just like the next 5 years. That's my problem with
that.
That's
the only thing. Yep.
Yeah, that's the challenge. But I'd take it. Hey, if you get those results for us, I'll take it. I can eat that.
Bennett, the one positive that I'll give you is that, you know, JMU hired a coach with just a really strong name, you know, Preston Spradlin. You know, Preston is just one of the better names that you can find in college basketball. I know Tony Bennett gave me grief years ago, right before they played Ohio, and I asked a question about Jason Preston, and he was like, you only asked that because of the name. I'm like, I mean, he asked it because he's their best player, but yeah, sure, let's go with that. All right. We talked a little bit in part one about some of the freshmen, and Hayden Miller on Twitter asked, which freshman do you think will have the biggest impact this season? So he's also throwing in the redshirt freshman, Christian Bliss, Anthony Robinson. Then you got Ishan Sharma and Jacob Kofi. I think I know which way we're going with this, but Cuts, if you want to give your opinion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Kofi. I think Kofi's going to be a staple of the early season as well as the later season. I anticipate he'll get better, the more he learns the defense as well. I think the staff really likes him, which is a big part of it, but he's also just, you know, really good and talented. And he adds some length and athleticism, but also some playmaking, the ability to step out and hit a shot. So I anticipate it'll be Kofi. Sharma would be my second take in terms of being involved there, and with Bliss kind of being the wild card. To me, it looks like unless something changes, Robinson's more on the outside looking in.
Yeah, nothing of substance to add. I would also go down in that order of Kofi, Sharma, Bliss, who really knows, and then, yeah, Robinson probably on the outside.
It's really interesting. Yeah, after Bliss and Robinson take the redshirt year, it seems like they're getting lapped now by Kofi and Sharma coming into the program. And, you know, Bliss, you know, had some injury issues that he had to deal with, and, you know, maybe that's still hampering him. We don't know for sure. And then Robinson was just such a raw prospect coming in, and it seems like he still needs some of that seasoning. So we'll see. You know, I'm sure they'll get some play time early on in conference play, or not early on in non-conference play. And we can kind of see what they do. But it was funny coming out of the blue-white scrimmage. I was like, I think Anthony Robinson had a better scrimmage last year than he did this year. And so, Jacob Kofi, I think is probably going to get, 15 plus minutes in the rotation this year. So it's got to be him as far as freshman. All right, from Adrian Vigil. 3-point shooting was allegedly not so good during the secret scrimmages, and we saw a box score. I think the number was 2 for 27 against Georgetown. How worried should we be about this team's ability to shoot after IMAC? Who's going to have the most made threes, Power Saunders or someone else?
I actually don't think 3-point shooting is the issue. I think it's how you get the 3-point shots that's going to be the tough part, and just how good a shots they are. I think who's going to have the second most made threes is going to be Saunders, purely because he's going to play the most minutes. I think, and I do think that he's going to be a pretty good shooter. Power, probably third there, I guess. And probably maybe he could pass Saunders if he really does sort of establish himself as capable of playing, in the 3-4 with Saunders, or is really good at the four, in small ball lineups, as maybe we're not totally expecting. But yeah, I think the bigger issue is, how do you create more open shots to be able to take advantage of the spacing that you have? Because I think what this team does have is the shooting that last year's team doesn't. What I think that this team is lacking, I mean, last year's was too, beyond Reese Beekman, is the ability to create offense and beat a guy off the dribble, you use a ball screen to create separation and make plays and force a defense to rotate. Maybe the scheme will make up for some of that. The scrimmages would imply maybe not yet there. And then I think it kind of comes down to who can put the ball on the floor and go make a play for somebody else to be able to kick it.
Yeah, I mean that's well said. I don't really have a ton else to add there. I think, you're going to be relying a lot on Ames to sort of make plays for others now. Interestingly, Andrew Rohde led the team in assists in the scrimmages, so that was that's something as well. Maybe his vision and ability to reverse the court, but I don't think the bad shooting there is a product of the fact that there are bad shooters. I think it's, without seeing it, it's more likely a product of either they just had an off day or what kind of looks were they, to Zach's point. So that's what I think I'll be paying the biggest attention to this year, is what does the offensive scheme and system look like, who's creating the shots, and how clean are those looks.
Who's finishing second in threes?
I like the Saunders pick, honestly. I think he's going to be on the floor a lot, so volume is going to be key there. I wouldn't disagree with the order. I think Power will probably be third. If Sharma or Tane Murray grab a lot of playing time over the span of the season, you might see them up there, but I don't think they'll individually be on the floor enough to pass either of those three.
Yeah, I want to bring up, because I think actually TJ Power, I'm gonna go with, we're second over Saunders. I know Saunders probably get more playing time, but this is the quote that Ron Sanchez had on TJ Power. He said, "I do think that he's going to contribute. How much and where will determine to see basically on his ability to shoot the ball. He's not a post-up player at 6'8", 6'9". He's more of a shooter. So for him to contribute, he'll have to shoot the ball well and share the ball." Basically, you're not going to stay on the court unless you can't shoot. So I think TJ Power will be on the court, and I think he will be able to shoot. It's kind of been, I guess, what they're relying on him for this year, is to be able to be that floor spacer, along with Isaac McNealy, and you kind of need that. And I do like absolutely what you're saying with the creation ability. That is huge, and that's been my one question about this point guard by committee thing is, well, are you going to get enough creation and separation to be able to kick out to shooters? Like, I mean, McNealy was run off the 3-point line every single time last season, and that's why I think the offense looks so bad, because he couldn't get open shots. So yeah, I like that, but I'm going to go TJ Power for second and threes. All right. Last mailbag question from a guest, a celebrity guest, from Hole, Stanley Yelnats. We've got over under 8.5 ACC wins. And I'm going to preface that with this. Virginia has had over 8.5 ACC wins every year since 2010. That was Tony Bennett's second year at UVA. He has had at least double digit ACC wins every year since 2012. Over under 8.5 ACC wins, Zach.
Yeah, I'm slamming the over on this. I would bump the line up. I know I pulled up
I
KenPom.
think
They
the
have
line's a
UVA.
little low, yeah.
They have the line at, I mean, KenPom has 9-11 projected. So I mean, how much do you buy preseason KenPom? I think for them to be under 8.5, things would have to, like, as I said earlier in the last show, I think the wheels would have to fall off. I still think that there's talent on this team. I think that the ACC is good, not great. I think that there are going to be wins that they can just sort of, there's going to be enough wins that they can pick up. They'll still have, one of the best home court advantages in the ACC, which how much value does that really have? But I think it's something, and for a team like this, they're going to be able to benefit from that. But yeah, I think they'll pick up 9 wins. My question is how many more than, or how many more than 8.5?
Yeah, I think 9.5 might have been a more interesting line, but I'll hit the over on this as well. I do think I'm less confident about it than I certainly would have been a couple of weeks ago. But they still like the talent on this team. I do think the Worley loss is going to have a bigger impact than some might. So you're dealing with that plus the sort of cohesion gelling issues of the new coaching staff. So. But ACC play doesn't happen for a while, so you have a little opportunity to work some of that out. So I'll still take the over on this.
I'll also just add, like, they don't hit the tough stretch of their ACC schedule until mid-February when they go
Yeah.
Duke, UNC, Wake Forest, and Clemson. I think those are the four teams that were picked above them in the ACC. So along with the ACC schedule being a little bit down the line, the toughest opponents are also a little bit down the line.
No, and that's exactly what you want. You want to build into the season. Obviously, they have a tough non-conference slate, so they're going to get tested early on. I would hammer the over as well. I'm kind of sticking around 11 wins at the conference. I look at the bottom of the ACC this year. Boston College, Stanford, Cal, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is really looking down, especially after they just lost Hysier Miller, their transfer from Temple, who is no longer on the roster. And he was kind of, from all intents and purposes, he was going to be the guy that stirred the drink there in Blacksburg this year. And now you don't have him. Florida State's down a little bit, although they do have Jahmyr Watkins, who's going to be one of the better players in the conference. So I would hammer that over at 8.5. Player predictions now. My first one, and it might be easy, which is why I'm going to throw a twist after I toss it out there. Starting lineup day one, Gince Campbell at home. Who is it?
Cats, you wanna?
Yeah, sure. So, I think it's going to be Ames McNeely. The third spot is probably between Rhodey and Power, but I'll say Power based on what they showed in the black blue white scrimmage and just. In general, I think their comments about sort of wanting to get their best players on the court, I think they do think he's one of them. It does bring up an interesting question about where does he fit defensively? He's going to struggle some with threes. I think he's going to also struggle some with fours. So you're just going to have to find the right place to play him. And I do like the idea of playing collective size. And this would have been my pick for lineup, but I also think this is where their head is leaning. So I'll go Power, Saunders, and then Buchanan.
Yeah, I also think that that's the way that they'll go. I think about a month ago I said Rhodey just
Yeah.
because I thought they'd want to try to get some creation on there. I know Tane Murray is the other guy that people have floated. I sort of think that, like, if you're looking to get that shooting on the floor, and I know that he is solid defensively, but if you just want sort of a catch and shoot guy on offense, I think that you can find ways to work. You'd like to be able to try to find ways to work around Power just because of what he brings. So I think those are the five. That being said, I think that they could have to reevaluate that depending on how things look defensively.
You led right into my next question.
Okay.
Is this what the lineup looks like at the end of the season? Because I also have Ames McNeely, Power, Saunders, Buchanan. Do you think that's the starting lineup at the end of the year?
I'm going to throw out a wild starting. This is where I would love to, I think if we hit our upside, this is what we would have on the floor would be Ames McNeely, Saunders, Kofi, and Buchanan. I don't know if we'll get there, but that would be, I think, A great combination of sort of size. You're not losing much with your shooting. You got a lot of athleticism, and then you can put in, power there as your sixth man to kind of spell either, and you're still kind of maintaining that shooting and size. That's where I would go, is the progression is, even if that's not maybe the final starting lineup, you're going to see more and more Kofi minutes.
You're going away from small ball.
Yeah, yes, I am, and I think this is the team to do it, because I think, especially after losing Worley, most of your, other than the McNeely, most of your talent with upside that you're kind of most excited about is in the front court.
Zach, you think same lineup, or you think it's a little different at the end of the year?
I think that things will change. I think that they'll throw different guys into that three spot. I think if they're struggling to create, that's when you see a roadie. Gosh, when it was Worley, I was pretty confident that that was the lineup that they were going to end the season with, or just like that was what they would be best at by the end of the year, because his departure leaves more up in the air defensively and makes it a little bit. There's just one less really good defender that you can count on to sort of own a matchup. And like, does that mean that then the pa presence of power hurts you more than it did before? I don't totally know. We need to see it. I still think that those five are your best, going to be your best combination of players. Although I am intrigued by the Kofi at the four and Saunders at the three lineup. I'm really curious to see how many times we see that this season. I think probably with Bennett it would be very little, but maybe
Exactly.
now they get to play around a little.
Saunders has got to be able to sustain his shooting for that lineup to work, though. And we've seen good signs of it. Yeah, because I mean, if you're going with that lineup, your only two plus shooters you're relying on are McNeely and Saunders. Yeah, but
Yeah,
Kofi
no.
can knock it down a little bit too. And that would be just like a very physically imposing lineup that
Yeah.
still could spread the floor. So we'll see.
And they've been, I mean, as we said in the first show, I mean, they've been talking about Kofi as a four. Saunders talked about him guarding the four. And so I'm really curious, like, what that looks like. Is it twin towers with Buchanan and then three guards to make up for not necessarily having as much of, like, yes, he can shoot, but, you know, he's not quite the playmaker of Saunders, or maybe not quite the elite shooter of TJ Power. Is it in just a jumbo lineup, like what Kutz was talking about? Really interested to see how they use him.
All right. Next up, sixth man, most minutes off the bench. Y'all are starting to convert me a little bit, but I'm sticking with Tane Murray here just because he's the veteran guy. He provides invaluable skill with his shooting off the bench. He's one of two guys over 40% last year for Virginia. So I'm gonna stick with Tane Murray off the bench. I think there are, he's got a shout to maybe start some games this year as well. But Cuts, who are you going with for sixth man slash whoever gets kind of the most minutes off the bench?
I think I would go with Rhodey would make the most.
That's the one you're converting me on a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, not that I, you know, I think that just to kind of back up on the Rhodey discussion for a second, I know he's taken some heat. I think some of that was the fact that though we sort of continued to play him at times last year when maybe the option would have been better to kind of explore other avenues. But like the ability is still there to, he's got great court vision. He does have, solid ball handling skills. I think, he's going to have progressed his game. We've seen him sort of as a fixture throughout, still with the blue white scrimmage, throughout the other scrimmages. I think he's going to provide stability there, especially now with this wouldn't have been my answer if Worley was still on the team. I don't think, but yeah, with Worley not on the team, he's going to be backing up Ames for those point guard minutes, and I still think we're going to see him get flexed in there at the threesome. I think, he's gonna end up with a solid chunk of minutes throughout the season.
Yeah, I'm with Cuts. He stole my answer. I just think that, yeah, in a post-Worley world, he gives you more that you need than a Murray, than a Sharma, than some of those other guys in the backcourt, than a Bliss. with being able to, as Cut talked about, being able to guard a point guard, being able to sort of do some things on offense beyond, I mean, the shooting was a problem last year, but doing some things on offense beyond shooting, and create. And I mean, I was high on him when he got here from St. Thomas. It was probably too much of a projection. And
I was
maybe I
right there
didn't.
with you.
Yeah,
I
no,
was
I
right.
mean, I was out there making Ty Jerome comps. Like, that's on
Okay, I
me. I'll
didn't go
take I, not like not not
that
comps, but in that mold. Obviously, like, things kind of went downhill last year. But yeah, I think that if Andrew Rohde is sort of an underrated player who, if he has a bounce back year, could be really valuable for this team. What does a bounce back look like after you shoot 25% from three? Like, that's a
Yeah.
tough, it's tough. And I get why people are sort of hesitant to project him in a big role. But, as we've all said, post-Worley, things sort of everything's just thrown up in the air.
All right, surprise player this year. I've leaned towards Jacob Kofi because I think, just as a true freshman, you don't really know what the expectations are coming in, but I think he's going to be the second big man in the last decade to play, 15 plus minutes as a true freshman, and I think he's going to get probably over 20 minutes a game, which has really been reserved for kind of special guards like McNeely, Reese Beekman, Kihei Clark, even Kyle Guy as a true freshman. So I'm going to lean with him just because the versatility he brings. I'm interested, a lot of guys talked up his shooting, so I'm interested to see if that translates to Cuts, surprise player, anyone sticking out to you?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, depending on how you classify, I would agree it's Kofi. I'm actually expecting him to get that run now, so I'm not sure how much of a surprise. But if you had asked me before a lot of these changes and sort of much earlier, like over the summer, I wouldn't have. I would have been questioning whether he was even going to redshirt or not. So the fact that I think he's such a potential staple that I think we'll see is a bit of a surprise. So I'll agree with that one.
Yeah, I think Kofi is like the surprise player for the season, as you guys have laid out. I do think Christian Bliss is going to have a couple good games. Like, I think that, whether it's like due to an injury or someone just not playing up to standard, he'll get run, and I think could have like a couple games where you're like you look back a couple years later and like, oh man, like, right, Christian Bliss had 12 points in that game against, I don't know, Cal. Like, what the heck was that? And maybe that's a sign of things to come. Maybe it isn't, but yeah, I think that he could maybe be a guy to provide a surprising spark here and there, even if it is if it isn't across the whole season.
He's definitely got a runway now with Jalen Worley leaving.
Right.
There's not, you've got Ames and Rohde, and then kind of it Bliss has to be the next guy up after those two. All right, we're gonna go quickly through these. Just kind of your leaders for the season, leading score, and I'm gonna add another one in here with that. How many guys average more than 10 points a game? Last year it was two. It was Reese Beekman at 14 a game and Isaac McNeely at 12 a game. So leading score and how many guys average more than 10? Cuts, you can go ahead.
I will agree McNeely's leading scorer. I think we'll have three. I think McNeely, Saunders, and Power could get to double digits. I think that's realistic.
Yeah, I agree with McNeely. I think Saunders is another one that you can probably take to the bank there. I'm a little iffy on Power.
Yeah.
Probably less iffy, maybe post Tony. Maybe now that like Sanchez might be a little bit more willing to sacrifice defense for offense. At least in a big lineup with him at the three, I think Tony probably would have enjoyed the small ball. I don't know. I go back and forth. I think he's going to be on the fringe.
Yeah, I have McNeely leading scorer for sure. Saunders absolutely over double digits. I have a feeling there's going to be a third guy. I'm not sure who I'm ready to peg as the third guy. I think Power's probably the leading candidate. I think there's a shout for Blake Buchanan, just because of minutes. And gosh, it seems like this guy every single game last year he was open under the basket. If he could just, worked on his hands and it was a little more physical and he could just finish a little bit more consistently. Like he was going to have 10 plus every game last year. So, with the extra pounds he put on in the off season, maybe he can do that. Data Ames will have the ball in his hands a lot. I think 10 points is a far shout for him. I would probably peg him more like the 7, 8 point range. So I think power is probably most likely. Blake Buchanan kind of my next guy in line for that. All right, leading rebounder. Speaking of Blake Buchanan, I probably is it Blake unanimous here, or you got any other shouts?
I'm going Saunders here.
Yeah, I
Okay.
would too. Wow.
Just
Okay.
because I think partially because of lineup changes, I also think he's just going to play the most minutes in the front court. So in a per game setting, I think now we could maybe rebound rate would be different, but I would honestly maybe still stick with him there. Having that four that's going to, be able to go hunt the ball is important for this defense. So yeah, I'd go Saunders.
Yeah, Saunders has an incredible ability to track the ball, and he's really good at crashing down, especially when he's not like boxing a center. So I think Buchanan's going to be doing a lot of like keeping the opposing bigs off the boards, and Saunders is going to be the one who kind of runs in and cleans it up. Plus the minute piece that Jack mentioned.
We're going that classic Jack Salt role for Blake Buchanan. Box out the guys so the other guys can come in and get the rebounds, a la Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy when they were getting boards.
That was a good time.
leading assists. I had Worley pegged until this week. Now I'm not sure, but since Data Ames is going to be the starter at point guard, at least at first, he's the guy I'm going to go with. It's not going to be the six assists that Beekman and Kihei Clark have been averaging, maybe more like three. Zach, who do you have for assists?
Gosh, yeah. I think Ames is, as you said, probably the safe answer. Gosh, I don't know. I'm trying to find like a sneaky one
Yeah.
that's a potential leader, but I mean, you throw Rhodey in there as an option if we're talking about him as the sixth man. There's a world where he sort of comes in, provides a spark, gets some bench minutes against, maybe not necessarily always starters, so then that accelerates that. Yeah, I think it's Ames. I was thinking of maybe like a sneaky another Elijah Saunders pick, but his assist rate at San Diego State was 6.5, even though I do think he's an above average passer for his position.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. It's probably Ames. I mean, Rhodey is I think the sneaky alternate pick and the one that I would, at least bring into the conversation, because I do think he's the most skilled passer on the team. But I think Ames is going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And he's going to be on the floor a lot, and there really aren't that many viable alternatives to him at this point. So I would imagine that he's going to end up with the most there.
Yeah, Ames averaged two assists last year in 20 minutes a game for Kansas State. He did have a nice finish to the season. He had five assists in their NIT game that they played against Iowa. Couple, but nothing too crazy. But yeah, I think it's just opportunity here for him. All right, this one a little projection, and I already kind of spoke ahead on a previous podcast when I was on with Greg Medea. From the Daily Progress, I predicted, and I'm the question is any all ACC honors. I predicted Elijah Saunders is going to make one of the all ACC teams, and I still feel pretty confident about that, just the versatility in his game. No UVA players on the preseason all ACC team, but you guys feeling, Saunders, McNeely, what do you think all ACC?
So there's three teams of five, and then honorable mention is 10, right?
Yeah.
If I
And
did that
I'll even
correctly.
give you honorable mention.
Well, so I think Saunders will be on all defense.
Okay.
I'll give you that one to start with. I do think that he'll probably be in like an honorable mention conversation, and then McNeely, depending on how good Virginia is, and how much he can score beyond being a 3-point shooter. Like that's my big question for him. I think most people's big question for him, after shooting around 30%, or 34 or something like that on non-3-point shots last year. So yeah, I think McNeely will be somewhere. I think Saunders will probably clean up some other honors there, and then maybe you get a Jacob Kofi, all rookie team.
Yeah.
I think Saunders is the best bet again. I know, this is kind of the Saunders praise hour, but I do think he's, I'm excited about what he brings, and I think he's just a versatile player who's going to impact the game in a lot of ways. So he would be my best bet, and I could certainly see it. more on the honorable mention side. I think McNeely, is a recognizable name, and if he gets up there in points, I could certainly see it. I do think he's going to have a little bit more of an opportunity to score inside this year because I think he's going to, we talked about him getting run off the 3-point line, but I think every time he did that, he faced a congested lane and just, wasn't going to go in there and try to finish among the trees and ended up taking a lot of floaters and sort of short pull-ups. I think he'll be able to get to the rim a little bit better this year with the spacing. At least that's the hope. So, I could see him squeaking into like third team along those lines if he has a sort of a high point per game output.
He's a sneaky finisher inside when he does get the opportunity. But yeah, like you said, it was so congested last year because no one else was hitting a three. And on Elijah Saunders, just interesting. He has led UVA in scoring in every single scrimmage this season. It was, I think, 12 points in the scrimmage, the blue-white scrimmage. Then I think he had 19 against BCU and 10 against Georgetown. So clearly, like, he's going to be a factor offensively and defensively, and we've talked so much about him on this podcast. All right, season predictions now. Which big non-conference game would you pick Virginia to win at this point? So we'll go through them. In Baltimore, third game of the season against Villanova. What that is like the ultimate, where is college basketball at this stage game? Because you got Kyle Neptune against Ron Sanchez instead of Tony Bennett versus Jay Wright at this stage. Then you go down to the Bahamas. You got Tennessee, a really good Tennessee team. And then either the winner or loser of Baylor, St. John's, and then at Florida for the ACC-SEC Challenge, and then home against Memphis in the return leg of that game. Zach, which one would you confidently pick at this point for Virginia to win?
None of them. No, I would, if I had to pick one, I'd say Memphis. It's the home game. I think that they are not a bad team, but the worst of this group of teams. So yeah, I mean, they could pick up a sneaky one, and there are enough opportunities here that I think they could grab one. I think after the embarrassment last year, well, I guess there aren't a lot of guys back, but the ones who are back will want to avenge that loss.
Yeah, I mean it's also the furthest one out, so they have the most time to
Yeah.
gel. But I could see Villanova being vulnerable as well. I know that's early in the season, but I think of the group. I mean Memphis has got a lot of chaos too. So I mean the correct answer I think is Memphis, but I could see Villanova being a win we could pick up early.
I'm going Villanova. I think it's going to be a weird game. I think, Villanova wasn't great last year either. I think it's just going to be a weird early season game where, these teams don't look anything like they did later in the season. But I think they kind of just pick it up. Weird game in Baltimore of all places. So I'm going to go with that one. All right. What statement win does UVA pick up in ACC play? Or you could say none, I guess, if you want to. Zach, I'm going against your pick against Duke. I think they get handled pretty thoroughly at home against Duke. But I do think they rebound and kind of surprise some people and pick up a win on the road at UNC later that week.
Yeah, that would be an encouraging result. I, gosh, it's a long ways away. It's also just tough because, like, the ACC is pretty top heavy. I guess you could call Clemson at home a big win, but I feel like as statement wins goes, it's probably Duke or UNC. Gosh, I don't know. I will go with Clemson just because I think that Duke and UNC are going to be quite good this year, which is hot take, but I think that they'll rebound from, I mean, if they can go 2-2 or even 1-3 in that 4-game stretch of Duke, UNC, Wake, and Clemson from February 17th to March 1st, I think that that's a success. So I think that they'll pick up Clemson and pick up a little bit of steam heading into the ACC tournament.
I think I'm gonna go with one of the Louisville games. There should be better this year. We do well in the KFC Yum Center. So I'm gonna
JPJ
pick.
West. A
Yeah, exactly.
lot of good memories.
So I'm gonna pick the road game at Louisville.
I'm going to throw out another one. Does Virginia win in Blacksburg this year? It's right before that Duke game, that Saturday, February 15th. Do they beat Virginia Tech on the road? Not a great Virginia Tech team, as I just said earlier, but do they do it?
That's a trap game. I didn't realize that was a Saturday Monday. That's such a, I mean, I'm sure this team will get up for Virginia Tech on the road, but wow, that's tough to go at Blacksburg and then host Duke Monday.
I think they did that a couple of years ago too. I think they like to put this road game against Virginia Tech right before some other big games on purpose.
That's
Yeah, no, that
tough.
was last year, I think. That was no, it wasn't. It was right before UNC. Yeah, it was right before the home UNC went to Virginia Tech last year, and that was when we lost by a lot. I do think they'll win that game. I think they're going to remember that game from last year. It's late enough in the season that I think they'll be playing well, and I do think the team's more talented than Tech.
Yeah, I agree. I don't buy Virginia Tech this year. I mean, I don't think a ton of people are, but yeah, I think this is a year where you'd be able to go 2-0 against Virginia Tech, and which is not actually that common recently.
No, it's not. That's why I asked the question. It has been weird games in Blacksburg for sure. All right, last one, or last two. Where does UVA finish in the ACC standings? We did the ACC wins earlier. It's tough to say. We talked about how top heavy the conference might be this year with Duke and UNC. I think Wake Forest and Clemson are other good teams that, I thought Wake Forest should be ranked to start the season. I think they have a lot of really good talent. And Clemson, they bring back a lot of guys. I'm not as sure on the top end for them. I know they made a good run last year, but as we've seen with North Carolina before, having a good run the year before doesn't always translate to the next season. So, where does UVA finish in the standing cuts?
Before the Coach Bennett retirement decision, I would have had us at fourth probably. And I had some discussions with one of my Saintling who has been writing for the site about this because he had them lower even before the retirement. Because there are just a lot of new pieces that have to gel together. But in the wake of the retirement, I'd have us down probably around sixth. I know we've historically finished much better than that, but this isn't really a historical time. I do think it's still going to take some time to sort of gel and find our footing. I think there's going to be obstacles to that throughout the year and sort of those ebbs and flows. And there are some good teams like SMU is potentially a little underrated. Louisville could be better. Clemson's in the mix. And then we know Wake, Duke, and UNC should all be pretty good. So I'm going to say six.
Yeah, I mean, just looking back at the ACC last year briefly, those top four teams, UNC, Duke, UVA, Pittsburgh, and then it was a three-way tie for fifth at 11-9, and then I guess two-way tie for eighth with VT and Florida State at 10-10. So like there's a in that sort of in the range of possibilities for UVA, it's a pretty small margin of error between like ninth and fourth or fifth. And I think that that will probably be some of the cases as Cuts talked about, some of those, some decent teams in the ACC last year and obviously more of them now. Yeah, I'll go, gosh, I'll go sixth. I'll go seventh. I think they're just going to drop a couple of games that they might not have with Bennett, and they'll still be a good team. They'll clear that 8.5 bar, but they won't get the double bye, and they'll need to upset somebody in the ACC tournament to sort of push for the NCAA.
And we mentioned the history. Since 2010, Virginia's only finished below fifth once, and that was in 21-22 when they only made the NIT. I'm gonna go fifth. I think, like y'all said, it's gonna be a absolute just car crash on the freeway in the middle of the ACC after those top four, and it's just kind of. There's going to be a lot of tiebreakers that we're going to have to talk about and learn. I don't know all the tiebreakers off the top of my head, so we're going to have to look at those throughout the year. But I'm going to go fifth for now. The one team that I struggle with, and you talk about all the new pieces that got to gel together and everything, but a lot of people seem to be really high on Louisville, but their entire team is brand new. You got a brand new coach. So I struggle with. Just assuming that, they're going to be able to make this jump. And they certainly could, because they did bring in some good transfers in the offseason. I think it's the Pryor kid from South Florida, Chucky Hepburn from Wisconsin, who Virginia is familiar with. So they're good players, but I struggle to be like, all right, Virginia's got seven new players. Well, Louisville's got what, 13 new players? So I'll go fifth for Virginia though. All right, last one. Does Virginia make the NCAA tournament this year? And if they do they come out with that elusive NCAA tournament win, Zach?
Gosh. Now that I've put them at seventh, I feel like I've sort of like handicapped myself, because then I'm either saying
Maybe
that the ACC
it's a
has
good year for
seven teams in. Maybe it's a good,
the
maybe they make a run in the ACC tournament that propels them. Gosh. I think, I don't know how they're, how it's going to work out. I think they make the NCAA tournament and lose in the first round.
ACC. Yeah.
I think this team has talent. Like, I do think there is talent there. I just don't. It's really tough, because I do think that this team was built to be a 2-year team, and I don't think we're going to get that now, one way or the other. Even if it is Sanchez coming back, so I think they sneak their way in, kind of like they did last year, and then, you know, we all go home after the first chance in March.
I mean, so my heart says yes, my head says no. I want them to make it, obviously, but there's just so many questions. Again, I do think the Worley loss is a big deal for this year's team. And I do think they're talented, and so you could see it gel, and you could see it all come together. But I think in addition to questions around the coaching change and sort of the team sticking together throughout the year, which you hope they will, but you don't know how that's going to play out. I think now we have some, backcourt, at least point guard questions where, how much can you ride Day-Day Ames throughout the year? How good is he going to be? How much is Bliss going to progress or pick up over the season? And how is Rhodey going to fill that? So there's just, in addition to sort of the turmoil around the coaching change, you have questions now around, I think, your positional depth. And you have a really tough schedule, at least early on. So I'm going to say they just miss out and they're an NIT team this year.
I think that is totally reasonable. I'm going to go with Zach. I'm going to be on that same page. I think they do make the NCAA tournament. I guess I kind of backed myself into the corner too by saying they're fifth, which, I mean, if the ACC is only getting four teams, then we got some other issues. So I'm going to go, they do make the tournament. I do think they win a game. But again, it all comes down to matchups. So who knows who they play? I know Joe Lunardi tries to predict brackets in, the middle of the summer, but I'm not here trying to predict any brackets, but I'll say they make it. They don't win a game. And who knows if that's enough for Ron Sanchez to keep the job past this year. But Zach Cutts, want to thank you for joining the Who's On podcast for this long edition of the UVA basketball season preview. We'll see you there on Wednesday, home opener against Campbell. Guys, let's have a good season, no matter what happens.
Go
Thanks,
Hoos.
Preston.
All right, that's it for the Who's On podcast. We'll catch you next time.